This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Family. First, however, our bulletin of church news. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis read the newspapers and had breakfast on Sunday after a second night sleeping well at Rome's Gemelli Hospital. That's according to a statement to journalists released on Sunday morning by the Holy See Press Office Director Matteo Bruni. The statement reads in full, "The Pope had a restful night and slept well. This morning he read the newspapers and had breakfast as usual. Therapy continues. There'll be another update at 5 p.m., the statement concluded. Pope Francis was admitted to Gemelli Hospital on Friday for an ongoing bout of bronchitis. The Holy See Press Office also released the Angelus address of Pope Francis as he continues his recovery at Gemelli. In his message, the Pope highlighted the role of art in uniting people and asked for prayers for peace in conflict zones. The Pope began by expressing sorrow that he was unable to preside at Sunday morning's Mass for the Jubilee of Artists and the World of Culture, saying, "I still need some treatment for my bronchitis." He said, "Today in the Vatican, the Eucharist was celebrated, dedicated in particular to the artists who have come from various parts of the world to experience the Jubilee days. I thank the Dicastery for Culture and Education for the preparation of this appointment, which reminds us of the importance of art as a universal language that spreads beauty and unites peoples, contributing to bringing harmony into the world and silencing every cry of war." He continued, "I wish to greet all the artists who have participated. I would have liked to be among you, but as you know, I am here at Gemelli Hospital because I still need some treatment for my bronchitis," he said. After greeting the pilgrims present in Rome on Sunday, especially the faithful of the Diocese of Parma, Italy, he went on to invite everyone to continue to pray for peace in tormented Ukraine, Palestine, Israel and all the Middle East, Myanmar, Kivu in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and Sudan. After thanking those who have accompanied him with their affection, prayers and closeness, he said, "I would like to thank the doctors and healthcare workers in this hospital for their care. They do such a valuable and tiring job. Let us support them with prayer," the Pope said. He concluded, "And now let us entrust ourselves to Mary, full of grace, that she may help us to be like her, chorists and creators of beauty that saves the world." During the Mass for the Jubilee of Artists in St. Peter's Basilica on Sunday morning, the prefect of the Dicastery for Culture and Education, Cardinal Jose Tolentino de Mendoza, the chief celebrant, delivered the Pope's homily. In it, Pope Francis writes, "As artists and representatives of the world of culture, you are called to be witnesses to the revolutionary vision of the Beatitudes. Your mission is not only to create beauty, but to reveal the truth, goodness, and beauty hidden within the folds of history, to give voice to the voiceless, to transform pain into hope," the Pope said. Joseph Tulloch has more.
Pope Francis' homily at Mass for the Jubilee of Artists and the World of Culture was focused on the Beatitudes, the subject of today's Gospel reading. The message was read aloud by Cardinal Jose Tolentino de Mendoza, the prefect of the Vatican's Dicastery for Culture and Education, since the Pope is currently hospitalized with bronchitis. In the homily, the Pope said that artists are called to be witnesses to what he said was the revolutionary vision of the Beatitudes. This task involves, the Pope said, not only creating beauty, but also revealing the truth and goodness which are hidden within the folds of history, and also giving voice to the voiceless. The Pope then went on to stress that artists have the task of raising existential questions. Although we live in a time of financial and social crises, the Pope said, ours is above all a spiritual crisis, a crisis of meaning. We need artists, he said, to help us to ask ourselves questions about time and about purpose. Are we pilgrims or wanderers? Does our journey have a destination or are we directionless? Artists have the task, the Pope said, of helping humanity not to lose its way. Another key role of art, Pope Francis said, is to help individuals distinguish the echoes of good and evil. Artists are sensitive to these echoes, the Pope said, and are therefore called to explain them to us and show us which path they lead down, whether they are seductive songs of sirens or authentic appeals to humanity. Quoting Psalm 1, the Pope suggested that it is the role of artists to help those who engage with their work to distinguish chaff scattered by the wind from what is solid, like trees planted by streams of water. And Pope Francis brought his homily to a close by returning to the day's Gospel and Jesus' proclamation of the Beatitudes. In the Gospel passage, the Pope said, Jesus proclaims as blessed those who are poor, afflicted, meek and persecuted. This is both a change of mentality and a revolution of perspective. Artists are called to take part in this revolution, the Pope said, exhorting his listeners to, quote, never cease searching, questioning, or taking risks. I'm Joseph Tullock.
Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin has granted a wide-ranging interview to Italian newspaper L'Eco di Bergamo, in which he reiterates the urgent need for a multilateral diplomacy of hope and for courage to negotiate peace. Lisa Zengarini reports.
In the wide-ranging interview with the editor of L'Eco di Bergamo, Cardinal Parolin addressed several pressing geopolitical issues, including the conflicts in the Middle East and Europe. Central to his reflection was that solutions to conflicts should never be imposed unilaterally, as such approaches prevent the establishment of a just and lasting peace. Asked about the inherent difficulties that international diplomacy faces today in addressing complex situations such as the wars in Gaza and Ukraine, the Vatican Secretary of State noted that the primary obstacle is the widespread mutual distrust and fear that fuel polarization and hinder constructive dialogue. He also reaffirmed that an increasingly prevalent club mentality in global politics further exacerbates diplomatic inefficacy. To overcome these challenges, Cardinal Parolin suggested a different diplomatic approach, rooted in what Pope Francis calls a diplomacy of hope, focused on dialogue, patience, and trust-building. Such an approach, he said, would be an alternative to the prevailing dynamics of confrontation and exclusion, proposing instead a framework that prioritizes understanding and long-term reconciliation. This is why, Cardinal Parolin added, it is essential to believe in multilateralism and strengthen the role of international institutions such as the United Nations, ensuring they can operate more effectively and representatively. Echoing Pope Francis and Pope St. John Paul II's words, Cardinal Parolin also emphasized that peace requires courage, justice and forgiveness, three values, he said, that seem increasingly absent in modern society. Turning to Europe, Cardinal Parolin said that if the continent is to continue to have a voice and role in the current world context, it must return to its historical and cultural roots that once gave Europe its strength and vision. I am Lisa Zengarini.
In Sierra Leone, the Catholic mission in Boidu, in the eastern part of the country, led by the Society of African Missions, or SMA Fathers, continues to grow, with increasing numbers of Christians and small faith communities. However, many villages still lack places of worship, forcing the faithful, some elderly and sick, to travel long distances for Mass. This was said by Father Paddy Cinder, head of the St. John the Baptist Mission in Boedu in the Diocese of Kenema. In a report published by the Fides news agency, Father Cinder said despite the challenges they face, the SMA missionaries remain committed, supporting education, youth programs and community outreach, our mission in Sierra Leone is gradually growing, as is the number of Christians and small communities. People continue to come and live their faith with great enthusiasm and participation, he said. Currently, the mission in Boedu serves 27 villages, yet only 6 have dedicated places of worship. Father Sinda also reported that the SMA missionaries recently opened a new mission station, but they have faced challenges such as thefts and security concerns due to the remote location of the mission house. Boedu is a town in Sierra Leone's Kailahun district near the border with Guinea and Liberia. The founder of the Society of African Missions, Melchior de Marion de Brasillach, was the first Catholic bishop of Sierra Leone. The first SMA missionaries arrived in the country 167 years ago in 1858. African leaders on Saturday elected the foreign minister of Djibouti to become the next leader of the commission that runs the continent-wide African Union. Mahamud Ali Yusuf defeated Raila Odinga, a former prime minister of Kenya, and Richard Randriamandrato, an ex-foreign minister of Madagascar, in a vote at the AU summit in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. And now to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where Rwandan-backed rebels are reported to have reached the center of Bukavu, the second largest city in the eastern part of the country. Last month, the rebels took control of the region's largest city, Goma. The M23 rebels are the most prominent of the more than 100 armed groups vying for control of the country's mineral-rich east and are supported by some 4,000 troops from neighboring Rwanda, according to the UN. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now our feature, family. Church in Africa as a family of God. Its people, challenges, values, and hopes.
My name is Father Paul Samasumo with your program, Family. Last week, we were discussing modern-day slavery, and our colleague, Sister Francisca Equia Framia of the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of Apostles, spoke to Ghanaian Sister Regina Ignatia Afla on her work with human trafficking. This week, we'd like to conclude the discussion.
Your project is a project of hope, and we are in the Jubilee Year of Hope. Do you feel there is still hope? Or the world has lost the battle of hope to human traffickers?
No, I think there is still hope. There is still hope. As we speak of the Jubilee Year, which Pope Francis is calling on all of us who are pilgrims on this earth to come together, it is one thing that we can say has he's trying to resonate this in the ears of all of us. There are different organizations, even in the Catholic Church, that are trying to promote or prevent or embark on advocacy campaign against trafficking, so that those who are trafficked, can be rescued, the traffickers can be brought to book. So there is hope. The church, the whole universal church, is embarking on this journey so that as many as who join or who hear the call of the Holy Father will spread the message. So yes, there is hope. I don't think we have lost it all. That is also one reason why religious congregation, like my congregation, as I mentioned, have taken it upon themselves to embark on a campaign, to embark on advocacy and sensitization program. You know, this is the only way that we can bring hope to people. When we reach out to the vulnerable, when we go to their remotest communities and to talk to them Because as we speak about trafficking, many people do not even know. Because in some of the communities, they think that it is part of the work that they do. I don't have money. I am poor. So let me give my children out to go and work in another person's farm or to be a slave to another person so that I can get something to live on. But as we go to them, as we speak to them, you realize that they get to understand the negative effects and they change. Most of them change from the actions or from this decision. So there is hope. And that is the reason why we are all talking, condemning trafficking.
You just mentioned advocacy. Could you please speak briefly to us about advocacy, law enforcement, and rehabilitation of trafficked persons, especially in Ghana?
Okay, so if we talk of advocacy, advocacy includes where we are able to speak against certain issues that are affecting the community, try to let's say, be the voice of the voiceless to the government, present papers or statement to the government, trying to kind of negotiate on instrument that protects humanity, or trying to influence public policy. That is one thing that we do when it comes to advocacy. We embark on different campaign strategies. We employ different methodologies and then see how we can also influence the public policy. When we also talk about the issues of rehabilitation, as I said before, when these children are rescued, that program was not human trafficking, but it was child trafficking, where we realize that the children are trafficked to work on the lake. The children are trafficked to work on the lake. So when we rescue them, we send them to shelter homes. We send them to shelter homes where we take care of them, because we support the shelter home. We try to look for the families. When we get the families, we go and talk things over with them. The child will be in the shelter home and be going through counseling and, if possible, school, depending on the stage that the child is. Then we also work on the family and we reintegrate the child back to the family. Because as you know, every child has the right to belong to a family. So we don't also want to deprive them of being part of the family. However, we take note of families that cannot take care of the children, and we look for someone in the family who is able to take care of the child, and we send the child back to their family. So that is what we are doing.
So, sister, following the conversation, what do you think needs to be done to prevent trafficked persons from finding themselves in the same conditions that led to their being trafficked in the same first place?
With my experience, I think it's only education that can, education is the solution to this problem. Because as I said, when we go to the communities, many of the families who say that we do this because we do not have money, we do this because that is the work our forefathers did when they were children and all that. So we are also doing that. But since we started with the campaign, many people are getting to know the effect that this trafficking is having on them. So they are very careful to give out their children to go and work with other people, or to give out their children to travel somewhere. You know, trafficking, when you take the child, You give money to either the parents or the one from whom the child was living with. However, we also have people who traffic the women, the young girls, and then they take them away. That is also the perpetrators that we normally arrest on the river. They are part of us. They are boat masters. I think that the more we continue the advocacy, the more we continue with the campaign, people will get to know. In Ghana, we were doing that with the police. We didn't do that on our own. When we finished investigation and we realized that, yes, there are traffic children or women somewhere, we involve the police and they go with us to do the arrest. The traffickers live with us. The traffickers are not like they are coming from somewhere far away. No, they are part of us. They take the women and they go and use them for different purposes, and they go and engage them in something that they are not supposed to do. So it's not like somebody who come from a different community or a different country. Traffickers are like all of us. They are like all of us. They are one of us. They are part of us. They live with us in the community. They live with us in the community. What they do is to lure the family into this. They try to use money to deceive people. So what we have to look for is, if you are in a community and then you see your own, it can be your uncle, your brother, your niece, your nephew, your cousin, who is doing some work that you have no idea about. And he's also trying to give money to people to follow him or her to a different destination to go and work. Then you have to start thinking otherwise. It is not all of them that we will need to follow. It is not all of them that you need to follow, because they are the same people who will take you away and go and use you somewhere else, which you have no idea of. So this is to be able to identify a person as a trafficker. With my experience, it's difficult, but these are the signs that we see. These are the signs that we see, that these people come and then they try to pay money, they try to deceive us so that we follow them to wherever they are. And those who traffic, like human trafficking, they traffic people to other nations, countries, to go and engage in certain type of works like prostitution. They come and then they deceive you. Follow me, I'll get you some job outside. And then they will give money. They will try to get your passport and all that you need. They buy tickets for you and take you away. The question we must be asking ourselves is, if the people are not there, let's say Kuwait, if the person is not living there, he's not from there, and let's say the person is a Ghanaian, like I'm from Ghana, why should we believe that person that he'll be able to get you employment in Kuwait where he or she is sending you to? So immediately people come and they begin to talk with us, convince us, we should be very careful. If not, we'll end up being trafficked somewhere.
We are very grateful having you with us today, Sister Regina. We pray,
thank you,
and hope that this sacrifice you are making for anti-trafficking human beings in our world will be graced by the blessings of God. Thank you, Sister.
Thank you to Sister. And let us continue to join hands to make noise, be the voice of the voiceless in our society. Thank you, Sister.
Sister Francisca Equia from here with Sister Regina Ignatia Flan on Family.
You have been listening to Family with Father Paul Samasomo.
Hello, dear listeners. This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, the Pope's Radio. We want to start by thanking you for being such an important part of our radio family. We would love to hear from you. Is there something you'd like us to feature more? Share your thoughts and let us know how we are reaching you, whether on shortwave radio, on FM, digital radio, or through our daily podcast. Also tell us from where you are listening and from which of the local radio stations that are rebroadcasting our program. You can text or WhatsApp us at +39 331 759 3275 or email us at inglese.africa@spc.va. That is INGLESE for Inglese. If you miss out on our radio broadcast, you can download the podcast within an hour after it goes on air at 16:30 GMT between the months of October and March, and at 17:30 GMT between April and October. Just go to www.vaticannews.va/en. You will see the podcast symbol on the top right-hand side of the website. Click on it and then choose English for Africa. You can also download our Vatican News app from the App Store or from Google Play Store to listen to the live broadcast, which is also available from our website. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.